You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, guys. What's going on? Welcome on in. It's Friday. Thank goodness. I will say pretty uneventful week for yours truly. But what a week it has been for Caitlin Clark since being drafted number one in the WNBA. From the second that she stepped onto the red carpet for the draft, she stunned. She was wearing head-to-toe Prada, which, by the way, this is the very first time Prada has dressed an athlete for the draft, the WNBA draft, and also for the NBA draft. So pretty cool fact there behind Caitlin Clark as she makes her debut. Now, Caitlin Clark also now making a salary for playing basketball, which will be a first for her, albeit not a great one. Around $338,000 for a four-year deal and $76,000 for her debut year in the league. It has everybody freaking out because the number one draft in the NBA made $55 million for the same contract length. That's 4 years, but that's business. And I don't think Caitlin Clark is worried about it because rumor has it, the star is about to ink a massive deal with Nike. This is going to be an eight-figure endorsement deal, which will include a signature shoe. And to be clear, eight figures. If you can't do the math on your own, that means at least $10 million. Some reports say the deal could be more than $20 million. So that is a nice chunk of change. And I'm sure that's just the first of many endorsements to come Caitlin Clark's way. I say invest that money wisely. She will be in very good shape, not to mention the cost of living in Indianapolis, my hometown, it's not so high. That is a major bonus. So obviously people are super happy for her. And how can you not be? She's about to become the face of the WNBA, not to mention she has already really, I mean, let's be honest, she really already has become the face of the WNBA. No shade to the veterans who have been there for several years, but she also has really become the face of women's basketball. She's helping people to care about women's basketball in a way that they never have before. And it is truly incredible. An Indy local, Pat McAfee, former Colts player, is taking inventory of the Caitlin Clark stock and looks to be possibly a major investor, already having her on the Pat McAfee show on ESPN this week and throwing it out there that realistically, this could be the first of many appearances from her. Listen.
I'll be like moving here in like a week. So,
welcome to the city.
Yeah.
Already find a place.
Yeah, I'll be like a weekly guest on here, I guess, if you want me to.
Deal.
Boom.
Yeah.
Sign a contract. Yes.
All right, that was going to be an optional conversation.
Okay. All right. Well, a weekly guest, I'm all for it. But as many fans as she has, as many people that are kissing her feet right now, you know what they say. If you ain't got haters, you ain't popping. And Caitlin Clark certainly also has some of those. And that includes disgraced former NFL player Antonio Brown, who seems, well, he never really seems to have much of anything productive to do on his hands, but the case remains. He had nothing better to do than to put out an extremely rude tweet about her. We're not going to show you, but it talks about her private parts and how he imagined they would look. He used a Mel Gibson meme to really get his point across. It was just all very weird. Anyways, this was his, what he put out to congratulate Clark on securing the all-time NCAA record. He put it along with the caption, "Congrats to Caitlin Clark on becoming all-time leading scorer. Hashtag Mel Gibson. Hashtag CTE ESPN. Hashtag Passion of the Christ." There was also another tweet, again, that we're not going to show you, but it was very strange. Not appropriate. And I'm sure Caitlin Clark isn't even paying attention. I would be shocked if she even knows that this tweet exists at this point in time. Because, you know, AB is definitely not on Caitlin Clark's priority list right now. I don't think he's ever going to be. So when it's all said and done, cheers to Caitlin Clark. May your beginnings in Indy keep getting off to a fantastic start, minus, you know, the whole creepy Greg Doyle thing, which he apologized, but still creepy. And now here to help me react on everything Caitlin Clark and so much more, we have OutKick contributor Amber Harding. Hi, Amber. Happy Friday.
Thank you. You too. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so did you happen to get a look at the tweet from Antonio Brown, the one that we didn't show?
I did. And I, coming from Antonio Brown, it didn't surprise me at all. But at the same time, it was gross. I was just like, man, like, why? Again, it's just another thing that, you know, female athletes or women in sports have to deal with that men do not have to deal with, right? But as far as the Mel Gibson thing, I don't think he's saying she looks like Mel Gibson. I'm not really sure what he's trying to say there, because if that's what he's saying, he's crazy, because she looked absolutely stunning at the draft in her Prada outfit and everything. I loved it. But I did see this morning that she actually blocked Antonio Brown on Twitter, and I don't blame her at all. I mean, that's at that point, there's no saving him at that point. I wouldn't want to hear it either.
Okay, so she is aware that the tweet existed. Okay, so as many things that are on her plate right now, that tweet still cut through all of the noise, it seems. And she took swift action, blocked him, and I guess she won't have to worry about him anymore. And good for her. She has so many other positive things going on in her life. I don't think Antonio Brown's nonsense needs to be included at all. Anything else about Caitlin Clark that's been going on through the course of this past week that you've like to see, that shocked you, that's concerned you? Anything stick out to you, Amber?
Nothing shocked me. The Greg Doyle thing was really something. That was the cringiest thing I think I've seen in a really, really long time, when Greg Doyle gave her the hard hands and then suggested that if she just gives him the hard hands, they'll get along just fine, which is a super weird thing for a reporter to say to an athlete he's covering. I know that he said, like, oh, I'm happy to have you. We're so happy to have you in Indianapolis. And that's great. Like, as I'm also from Indianapolis, just like you, Charlie, and I'm really excited that she's there too. But as a reporter who is covering her, you can't act like that. You're still a reporter who is supposed to be professionally covering the sport and not absolutely creeping out the athletes. But I feel like that probably didn't bother her maybe as much as it bothered people on Twitter and other reporters who saw it. And I wouldn't be that bothered either if I was signing a $20 million shoe deal this week. That's pretty exciting. I've always wanted to have my own shoe. I think that's like the coolest status symbol, is having your own shoe. But I don't think they do that for writers, so I think I'm probably out of luck.
Well, there's always time for a first. What kind of shoe do you think would represent you best, Amber? I mean, would it be a sneaker? Would it be a sandal? Would it be a heel?
I think those sneakers. That's probably what I wear the most. Just like a really good gym shoe, you know?
Okay, just like a quality gym shoe. Something you can rely on, something that's credible, something you can trust. Kind of like yourself as a writer.
Yeah, exactly. But then also something you can wear outside of the gym. You know, like a lot of the gym shoes, and no offense to anybody who likes these, but are just like these outrageous, crazy neon colors and combinations of colors that I would never actually wear together. You know, so like a shoe that actually like looks nice and you can pair with an outfit, or you can wear in the gym.
Yeah, I have a weird time understanding the brand Hoka. A lot of people are loving Hoka shoes these days, and I am like, I don't get it. They are so ugly to me, and they're so popular. So I'm like, am I missing something? Is there something here that I'm not aware of, because they're repulsive? But hopefully your shoe, which one day I'm putting it out there into the universe, I'm manifesting this for you, Amber. Hopefully one day your sneaker, hopefully worth $20 million, looks nothing like Hoka. Okay, speaking of things that make no sense to me, Amber, overnight, as of this morning, we woke up to some announced changes with Title IX. Now, I'm having a little bit of a hard time digesting, because they're not really totally coming together for me. It feels like the government didn't really say much, but at the same time, their attempt was to say a lot to appease their far left voting base. What can you tell us about these changes that have just occurred with Title IX?
Yeah, so there were some things in there about sexual harassment, and essentially trying to make it easier for victims to report sexual harassment, and a little more privacy allowed for them when their case is being looked at, I guess. So there was a lot like that, which is great. But then that the transgender issue on Title IX, they really tiptoed around. And I think that's a political
move. Exactly.
I think it's a political move by this administration, because as we found out from various polls, about 70% of the U.S. population, and that's Republicans and Democrats, agree that males should not be participating in female sports. So I think the Biden administration knows if they put out something that just blanket statement says that you have to accept males in sports, in female sports, just based on their gender identity alone, I think they would get a lot of pushback, and they know that. And they're trying to get votes in November, which is why they didn't do that. This provision that they put in here is so vague. I read it like three times and I was like, this is a whole lot of words saying really nothing. Basically, it says that schools, athletic programs cannot deny transgender athletes participation based on their gender identity, based on who they are, is what it says. So you can't just turn someone down because of who they are, which is, again, super vague language. They are allowing for schools to kind of put their own guidelines and their own regulations in place. But again, if it's just up to the individual schools, I'm not really sure how that's going to go legally and what those guidelines are going to be. Is it going to be, well, any kind of contact or combat sports they're not allowed in? Because that's also not fair to, you know, track athletes or volleyball or things like that, because they're still taking away opportunities from females. It's still an unfair advantage. Or are they going to say that you have to go through some sort of hormone or puberty blocking treatment in order to participate? That's also scary if we're talking about at a school level. I would not want high schools to adopt a policy that somebody has to be on hormone blockers, a minor has to be on hormone blockers in order to participate in sports. I don't really know how they're going to regulate this. And I think this was just the Biden administration trying to make everybody happy.
Exactly. Yeah. I think this was like a political stunt where it's like, oh, look, we did something. So, oh, you all should be happy. But, oh, by the way, we didn't do what conservatives didn't want us to do. So you should be happy. But like you said, I read over this article a few times and I was just like, make this make sense. Like, it just wasn't soaking in for me. And you're exactly right. They made a statement. You can't ban anybody from playing sports, which I didn't think there was anyone really banning anyone from playing sports in the beginning. They were just saying, hey, if you're transitioning or you're trans, you can't play with women. It's not saying you can't play sports at all. So it just feels like now they're just reiterating that and maybe giving schools a little bit more allowance to make the decision, like you said, which areas it makes sense if they are going to allow trans athletes to play with women, where it doesn't make sense anywhere. We know that. But like for the people that are just hard strung on making this happen, gives them a little bit more leeway. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. Hopefully all of this goes away with the November 2024 election and a brand new president. And we don't have to worry about it ever again, because it's just outrageous. And I think a lot of girls, more so around the country, are beginning to realize how outrageous this was, because there was just a step out during a track and field meet in West Virginia to protest transgender competition. Because as we know, earlier this week on Tuesday, the United States Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a West Virginia law that bars biological boys from competing in girls' sports cannot be enforced. So during a track meet then on Thursday, and this is video from that track meet, you can see several girls refusing to compete because they're like, this doesn't make sense for us. Why should we have to lose out on our opportunities and success on behalf of all of the biological boys that decide that they want to transition and then take roster spots away from us potentially? So what was your reaction when you saw these young girls? I mean, they're only probably, what, 13, 12, 13 years old, taking such a strong stand? I mean, that's pretty bold. I feel like when I was that age, I mean, I was pretty bold myself, but there's a lot who are maybe a little bit more on the shy side. So I think this is saying a lot that kids even as young as this are now willing to take a bigger stand.
Yeah, good for them and good for their parents. What I don't like, though, is that 13-year-old, the trans student, I don't blame the child. I do not blame the child for this. I blame the parents 100%, because according to the ACLU and that article that I read, that child began taking puberty blockers and hormones in the third grade. I mean, we're talking about an 8 or 9 year old who cannot possibly consent to or understand the long-term ramifications of these life-altering drugs. And you have parents who are putting them on these drugs. And they if that is the case, if it was in third grade, then that means it's been about 5 years now that this kid has been on these drugs. And that's just, that's insane. But good for these girls. I know that probably the only way to really end this is for female athletes to refuse to participate. The problem is that's a really, really tough ask for these girls because everyone has to agree to do it. Because if only a couple do it, then they're just gonna, life's just gonna move on without them, right? So everyone has to agree to do it. And then you have to protect them as well. There have to be protections in place. There was a school in, I think it was California, who it was a largely Islamic school who refused to play against a team that had a transgender athlete for religious reasons and just for the safety and the privacy of their own players. And they ended up being sanctioned and they ended up being punished by the powers that be in the California school district because of their refusal to participate. They got labeled as, you know, as bigots and not accepting and things like that. And so that's another thing that you have to worry about with these girls sitting out is the potential punishment that they might face.
Yeah. And I just think you only have a certain period of time where you're able to play these sports during your school years. I just don't see a massive protest like that occurring. I think probably even the parents who don't agree with this are going to say, listen, probably give them the life isn't always fair spiel. And I know this is hard and uncomfortable, but this is the only way for you right now to play the sport that you love. And it's really sad that a parent would have to have that conversation with their kid and just probably, you know, encourage them, even though they're feeling uncomfortable, to keep on playing. Because I know when I was growing up, if there was something that would have kept me out of my sport that I loved, I would have felt so lost. I mean, that sports was my whole identity growing up. That's what I did every day after school. I had softball, I had volleyball, I had gymnastics. You know, if I wasn't able to play sports, I'm really not sure looking back what I would have done, Amber.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I played sports as a kid. I played them all. I wasn't always good at all of them, but I played them all because I enjoyed it and I had fun. And I wasn't good enough to, you know, go pro or even play D1 or anything like that. But I, you know, that was a huge part of my identity as well as a kid. It would have been a real shame if I had lost out on those opportunities because of males playing on the team or because of safety or privacy issues or things like that. But it is really unfortunate that we are having to tell young girls that, you know what, life's not always fair. Sometimes you just have to deal with a man in your space, or sometimes you just have to take a backseat to men, because that's not a spiel that we have to give to men about women. And I think that that's just, I understand if a parent is giving that speech, I understand why. And I get everything that you're saying about how, like, this is your limited opportunity to participate and sometimes life isn't fair. Totally agree. But it's just a really sad state of affairs that we have to give little girls that speech, and little boys don't have that same issue. It seems like that was the whole reason Title IX was started in the first place, and now we've come full circle.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to the idea in Joy Reid's mind, that there's a lack of diversity in the MLB. I mean, this is the thing when you get people who don't even watch sports talking about sports, and they have really no idea what they're talking about, but they try to just cherry pick one little thing that might stand out to them or bother them, and they blow it up to try to mean something even larger. Here is what somebody who, on behalf of Joy Reid's blog, posted for her. This author was named Jahan Jones. They posted, quote, MLB's few black players left should be a warning about the war on DEI. The number of black American players in Major League Baseball has plummeted to just 6%, offering a warning about what can happen when institutions de-emphasize diversity. Now, this was immediately hit with a community note on X, which we all know what that means. It means this is not true. This is out of context. And these people have no idea what they're talking about, because, in fact, diversity is at its highest that it's ever been in MLB, for one. Not to mention, when you look at the counterparts, football, basketball, the NBA, the NFL, they have a completely skewed percentage as in the opposite direction as far as diversity is concerned, because in this entire country as a whole, Amber, white people account for 75.5% of the population, but only 16.8% of the NBA. Meanwhile, Latinos, 19% of the population, just 3.1% of the NBA. And that's also same with the NFL. Roughly 60% of players are black, and other entities are left to combine for the remaining 40%. Now, obviously, Joy Reid doesn't write about that, and I don't need her to write about that, because I don't care about the skin color of athletes. If you're a great athlete and you're phenomenal, then I want you to be professional, and I want to watch you, and I want to watch you excel and win championships and all of that. I don't care at all what your skin color is. Where does Joy Reid come up with the ideas that she should be zeroing in on MLB, but then turning a blind shoulder when it's really happening in the opposite direction to the NBA and the NFL?
Yeah, this was so funny, because MLB, out of the four major sports, is the most racially diverse. So that's Joy Reid's comments made absolutely no sense. In 2023, 60% of MLB players were white, 6% black, 3% Asian, and 30% Hispanic. That's far and away more Hispanics than are playing in the other four majors, or the other three major sports. So that should be a win for diversity, right? Because diversity doesn't just mean how many black people you have. So I think that sports, and I believe we've talked about this before, sports is the last like real meritocracy. We've seen DEI working in academics and in corporate world, but sports is really still based on your skill level. You know, as long as you are in professional sports, especially as long as you're selling tickets, as long as you're performing, as long as you're winning and making money for that organization, general managers don't care if you're white or black or purple. I promise you, there is not a player out there where a general manager looks at him and goes, wow, he's incredible in the field. He's batting 450. He's an amazing player, but he's black, so he can't play for us. That is absolutely
exactly
not happening.
Yeah, and that's how it should be. I hope that never changes, because if it does, we're really in trouble, Amber. And, well, watching sports will be a thing of the past, I believe. But it seems like watching the NBA is a thing of the past for a lot of people, because the NBA's numbers, the ratings are absolutely tanking. Clay Travis just put out a tweet yesterday saying, quote, the NBA's regular season, which ended this week, posted the lowest rated season in network TV history, dropping from last year's disaster. Overall viewership on cable and network TV was down too. LeBron and Adam Silver have destroyed the league. And here's just a few more facts to reinforce what Clay is saying. The NBA has lost half of its audience since 2012. The All-Star Game is down 80% since the 90s. It was the lowest rated regular season in network TV history. So it seems like the NBA, who's now in search of a third or fourth broadcast partner, because right now they have ESPN and TNT primarily airing their games throughout the regular season. And I think even the playoffs, they've been in search for more broadcast partners, even streaming platform partners. But it looks like because of these numbers coming out and the timing of it all, they might have some hard times finding someone who's going to give them the dollar amount they want, because they still are demanding. They continue to demand even higher numbers. Not sure they're going to get that after these numbers have been released.
Yeah. And for a product that is not doing well, that is struggling with viewership already, the last thing you want to do is go streaming only, or just even requiring your fans to pay to watch the games when they're already not watching them. It's kind of like when CNN had CNN Plus and it lasted for like 12 days because no one watched it and it lost a ton of money. That's kind of what that would be. But it's actually kind of sad because, you know, in the 90s, I think, Charlie, I think you and I are around the same age. And I just remember in Indianapolis, that rivalry between the Pacers and the Bulls. You know, you had like Reggie Miller and Rick Smits and Jalen Rose. I could probably still name that whole roster playing against Michael Jordan and his dream team. And of course, the Pacers never were able to topple them. But it was just this huge rivalry and everybody talked about basketball. Like everybody talked about the NBA as much as they talked about the NFL. It was huge, at least where we were in the Midwest. And even into like the early aughts when you had the Pacers mm-hmm. rivalry with the Heat and LeBron, and it was every single year in the Eastern Conference Finals, it was Pacers and Heat. And that was just always like really intense. Everyone talked about it. But now, I mean, I pay attention to the NBA. My coworkers pay attention to the NBA because we have to. But as far as just like my friends who are outside of the industry, I don't know a single one who is huge on the NBA who goes out of their way to really watch the games. And I think Clay is really onto something there. I think it has a lot to do with just how overly political things got with the NBA. And then also it's frustrating as fans to watch the preferential treatment for superstars like LeBron. That was so frustrating. You know, when I know it's frustrating for everybody, but just speaking from my personal experience, when I would watch the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Heat every single year, knowing we're not going to win because the league is not going to allow it to happen. Like LeBron is going to get every call, and you don't want to blame everything on the refs, but it's true. LeBron gets a lot of calls that other players don't get. He basically is the general manager of his own team. He just dictates how things go in the league, and it's getting old. I think it's really getting old for fans.
Do you also think that the idea of highlight culture is also doing a disservice to the NBA? Because, you know, for example, the NFL, there's only 17 games a season for teams, and most of those occur on the weekends when people are actually free and have their afternoons and evenings open, minus, you know, some of the Thursday night games here and there for some teams. But for NBA teams, I mean, they play, what is it, 70, how many games is it a season? 72? Is it 72? I think it's 72 games a season. Is that correct? Anyways, whatever. 72 games a season. And, you know, people just don't have the time to dedicate to watching all of the games. And therefore, they rely more on highlights. And now that we're able to get those highlights instantly as they happen on social media, and that's all people do is scroll their phones, you think that could also have a bearing on the ratings and the reason why people aren't watching games as much as they used to?
I mean, I think it certainly could, just having that access at our fingertips at all times that we didn't have in the 90s, you know, where we could just
It was 82 games. Sorry, I said 72. It's 82 games.
Close enough. It's still a lot of games. It's still, I think it's a lot like baseball in that sense that even if you're a huge fan of a team, you're probably not watching every single game from start to finish because, you know, in baseball is even more, it's 162. So that's a lot of time to be spent. Whereas football is usually on the weekends or in the evenings when people aren't at work and they can kind of center their day around it. Whereas the NBA mm-hmm. and MLB are a little different in that way. So I do think that's a good point. And I think that has a lot to do with it because I do know people who don't really pay attention to the NBA or even college basketball for that matter, until the playoffs, until the postseason. And then that's when they really start watching their team and rooting on their team and paying attention. So I think that definitely could be it. There's also the old joke about how like the only time that is worth watching in the basketball game is the last 2 minutes. I mean, that might have something to do with it too, but the NBA has a problem on its hands. I mean, they need to figure out how to get people to watch their games because the highlight culture, the highlights on Twitter, that's not going away anytime soon. So they're going to need to figure out that problem.
Well, I know that you aren't just sitting around watching the NBA because, Amber, you are an outdoorsy type woman, I'm learning. You spent, what was it, yesterday? Exploring the great outdoors of Tennessee. Tell me about your outdoors adventure.
Yeah, well, yesterday, my husband and I are big on hiking and just being outdoors, hiking, camping, all those things. So we go on adventures. I'm off on Wednesdays and Thursdays the life of a sports writer. That's my weekend. So we take that time during the middle of the week to just go exploring. There's two things that are really beautiful about living in Tennessee: no state income tax and just absolutely gorgeous scenery. So we can go anywhere within 1 to 2 hours of our home and find places like this where we can just venture out in the woods. And I make fun of my husband with that giant pack that he was wearing in that last photo, because he is prepared for anything. But I also love that, because like anything that might happen to us in the wilderness, my husband is ready and prepared to solve that problem.
Oh my gosh, this looks so cool.
Yeah. So every Wednesday or Thursday, we just venture out. We climb a mountain. We go find a waterfall. We go down into a canyon, whatever we can find. We take turns. So I picked this week. So next week he'll pick our destination, and then we celebrate.
Oh my gosh.
Beers. Yeah.
I am so impressed. I will just be quite honest. I mean, I like to hike. I'm just not much of an outdoors type gal because I'm scared of bugs and spiders. And, you know, you run into a lot of that stuff when you're out in the woods, but in theory, I like the idea. I mean, I always tell myself I would love to be on Naked and Afraid. But I know if you actually put me on Naked and Afraid, I would probably freak out in the first couple of hours and have to have the people come in and rescue me instantly. Would you go on that show? Do you think you could survive?
Ooh, I don't know, because my worst thing, I think anything, the scariest thing I've ever come across in the woods are mosquitoes. Like you get those really like deep summer hikes, especially where you're going near the water and you just get absolutely destroyed by the mosquitoes. I'll go out there just bathed in DEET, essentially trying to avoid that. And Naked and Afraid, there's not a whole lot you can do to protect yourself when you are literally naked. You're just like an all you can eat buffet for those little biting devils. So I'm not sure I could do that, because bugs, I'm with you on the bugs, especially the biting ones. I can't deal with those. So I try to take every precaution.
Okay. So we won't look forward to seeing you on Naked and Afraid as of right now, but we will look forward to hearing more about your weekly Wednesday, Thursday adventures with Hubs throughout the state of Tennessee. So I can't wait to hear about next week's adventure. This is fun. Maybe we'll have a little weekly catch up on it. Amber, you're always a delight. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful, well, I guess it's not technically your weekend, but enjoy your Saturday and Sunday.
Thanks, Charlie.
Outkick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Okay, so while I am not so much the outdoors type, I am the beach type. So put me on a plane, send me to a beach, and I am happy as a clam. The only thing that does not make me happy is the idea now, because people are insane, that reclining airplane seats might be going away from economy class. Now, we previously took to the streets of New York City to find out what people thought about reclining your seat. Is it a yay or is it a nay? Because people have opinions all over the board as far as this goes. So let's do a little throwback as to what we found out at that time.
Is it rude to recline your seat?
I would ask the person behind me first before I do it.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
I always hesitate pulling it back because I don't want to offend the person behind me.
Because you're a bigger guy, you need more space. You're seated and somebody reclines their seat and you have less room now to maneuver.
I just have to put up with it.
Nope.
No, I don't.
How come no one reclines their seats anymore?
Well, I care about people behind me somehow.
Do you think it's rude when someone reclines their seat on an airplane?
Yes.
You do? Okay, why?
I think it just depends where you're sitting. Like, if you're already sitting somewhere that's kind of cramped, I don't think you should do that just as a courtesy to the person behind you.
Well, have you seen the viral videos on the internet where people are going crazy when people recline their seats?
Oh, okay. So anyways, point is, most people do not recline their seats because they don't want to offend the person sitting behind them. I am not one of those people. I recline my seat on every flight unless I just forget, which actually happened on my last flight. And I was like, oh, it was a red eye flight too. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even recline. I could have been more comfortable sleeping throughout this entire flight. And I didn't. I was actually a little upset with myself. I will say though, because of all of the craziness surrounding this topic and debate, when I do recline my seat, it doesn't deter me from doing it, but I always think about it. I'm like, I wonder if the person behind me is going to be upset when I do this. And then I just lean on back and let the chips fall where they may. Anyways, that's what's happening right now. There are some airlines that are considering perhaps getting rid of the recline function. I will not be flying those airlines. I already don't fly Spirit and Frontier because they are absolutely the most uncomfortable seats in, I would say, airline existence today. They don't even serve you water unless you pay for it. I'm pretty sure at some point you're going to have to pay to use the bathroom on those airlines. So those are airlines I do not fly. I am a Delta girl through and through. But I am definitely going to make sure that I continue to fly those airlines where you can recline your seat because sorry, not sorry to the people sitting behind me. Okay, everybody, that is it. That is the week's worth of shows in the can. Finito, dunzo, thank you so much for being here. You can make sure to follow me throughout my weekend adventures. I might be going to a beach. Might. You'll find out if you follow me on social media at Charlie on TV. And until Monday, everybody have a fantastic weekend. I'll see you for the next episode.